Welcome to another episode of 10 Minutes With, supported by the PHA Group, where we meet entrepreneurs and business leaders from around the world to find out what makes them tick. Today, we're joined by Simon Dolan, an entrepreneur with a remarkable story. Expelled from school at 16, he set up a one-man accountancy business aged 22 to escape the dole queue. 5 years later, he launched SJD Accountancy, turning it into a market leader with a £20 million turnover and eventually selling it in 2014 as part of a £100 million deal. Simon set up his own motor racing team, Jota Sport, and has won the iconic 24-hour Le Mans endurance race. He also owns Jota Aviation, a chartered airline. Simon has invested in a wide range of companies, including the PHA Group, and in 2017 set up Dolan Accountancy with former colleagues. Simon, thank you for joining us. Tell me how you first started in business, because there's this remarkable story that you put a £10 advert in your local paper when you were pretty much penniless, and that's how you picked up your first client. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely true. I'd completely run out of money and run out of debt. So credit cards were maxed out, debt was all maxed out, and literally didn't have, you know, food in the fridge. And at that time, I was only 21, I think, and the only thing I knew how to do was to sell, and vaguely how to do a set of accounts. And at the time, I couldn't go and get a sales job because I couldn't drive. I'd lost my license for various reasons. And so I thought, well, the only thing I know how to do is accounts. So I did. I put the advert in. It was in the Denton Advertiser. Smallest ad I could buy, which I think was a 1x2. And actually, I heard nothing for 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, I'd completely forgotten all about it. It was just like another one of those things that hadn't worked. And one day at home, the phone goes, and I pick the phone up, and I say, hello. And the woman says, hello, is that SJD Accountancy? Yeah, that's me, yeah, that's us. And she was called Jenny Watts, a florist, never forget. She came over, I agreed to do her accounts, did that one set of accounts, she paid me my £99. And then, of course, I had the money to put another advert in the following week. Put another advert in, got one more client. And so it went on from then, really. And it was about, I was doing quite well, and it was about four, as you mentioned, it was about 4 or 5 years later that I actually got into a niche, which was actually when I moved back down south. And that was when things really started to take off. And then when I sold in, 14, we had 14,000 clients, 6 offices, 200 staff. But it was a very unglamorous.
But going from being a one-man band to running a business of that size, I mean, what sort of skills did you need to acquire to go from just being a one-man band to running a business of that magnitude?
I've got a few skills, and I think one of them is finding the right people for me. You know, not everybody could work for me, that's for sure. But the sorts of people I like are self-starters, people who don't really need any management, people who just get on with things. Maybe they need motivating, but they will just get on with things on their own. And that was the way I used to do it. So I used to find people, and it was very much a sink or swim. I'd recruit them, and they'd come in, and they'd either work out, in which ways it was great, and then I just used to promote them. Typical, you know, Peter principle, is it? Promote them up. Or they didn't work, and I got rid of them. So that it was a very sort of unpolitically correct way of doing things, but it was finding the best person I thought for the job, giving them the job, and letting them sink or swim.
Would you describe yourself as a born entrepreneur, or is it something you stumbled into?
An interesting question. I would say probably yes. I think I was born like it. My earliest memories are all about numbers, funny enough. There's a story, but when I was young, probably 2 or 3 or something like that, my mum lost me, basically. She couldn't find me in the house anywhere. And eventually she found me, and I was sitting in the cupboard under the stairs watching the numbers on the gas meter go round, because I found them fascinating. And always have. I've always found numbers absolutely fascinating. Mathematics I'm absolutely rubbish at, but numbers I was really good at. Less so now, because I don't use it so much. So I think the kind of entrepreneurial thing maybe just comes from that love of numbers, which translated then into a interest in it, an interest in money and how you make money. And then obviously that leads into, well, starting your own business.
Yeah, I mean, you drive cars very, very fast. Mm. Is that reflected in your approach to risk generally in business?
No. Well, is it? I suppose there is a bit of an analogy there. Obviously, you don't want risk when you're driving a car. The last thing you want to do is risk, but there is an inherent risk in it. but you do everything that you possibly can to mitigate that down to next to nothing. And I suppose when you're starting a business or when you're investing in a business, perhaps, then you do everything you can to minimise that risk.
I was going to ask you about your investments, because in the last 5 years, you've invested in a lot of different businesses, everything from business software to contract services, I think you've perfume, modelling. What's the first thing you look for when you're considering investing in a company?
Used to be, and probably still is, people. I couldn't go into business with somebody that I wasn't interested in, so I don't need to invest in any more businesses now. I enjoy doing it, but there's no one business that's going to make or break me. So something I enjoy, something I see potential in, and people I enjoy being with, because you have to enjoy the people that you work with.
Are there any sectors that particularly excite you at the moment?
There's some, but I think the excitement is probably not warranted by the returns that are necessarily there, you know. So it's all very exciting, artificial intelligence and self-driving cars and all that kind of stuff, but the reality is it's most artificial intelligence businesses aren't. So I'm quite excited on the funnily enough, on the medicinal cannabis business. I see that as being kind of the next thing that's coming along.
You wrote a book back in 2010, How to Make Millions Without a Degree, and I think back then the idea of encouraging people not to go to university was quite unusual. Since then, the introduction of tuition fees, I think that's perhaps more commonplace. Why do you think people, young people, benefit from not going to university?
It's probably the wrong way round of asking the question. My question was, what do they get out of going to university? So I don't see anything inherently wrong with it, provided that you look at the facts, and the facts are that you will come out with a huge amount of debt. Okay, you only pay it back when you earn a certain amount of money. But when you're earning that certain amount of money, then you've got this lump of money that you're having to pay back. So there's the risk of that investment, if you like. And what do you actually come out with? If you want to become, obviously, you know, a trade or profession that needs a degree, then you have to go along and do that. If you want to become a lawyer, there's no way around it. You have to get a degree. Other trades or professions that you could go into without it. If you're not academically gifted enough to come out with a really good degree from a really good university, it's not going to make a blind bit of difference to your career. So I think the question doesn't need to be about, you know, why kids shouldn't go to university. It simply should be, why should they go to university? And if there's a great argument that warrants that cost, then fantastic.
Right, I've got some quickfire questions for you. Sam, describe what you do in one sentence.
From a business point of view, I look for things that interest me, or people that interest me, and then see if I can get involved in some way.
Why does your business exist?
To make money.
When did you know you'd made it?
I don't, to be honest. You know, where I live in Monaco, so I appear wealthy from some point of view, but from other points of view, when you see, you know, £150 million yacht parked outside your house, you think, nah, I've not made it yet.
And who's the one person who's helped you most throughout your journey, would you say?
Probably no one individual that I know. Life coach type guy called Anthony Robbins, and I got into his books.
How many sleep do you get a night?
Oh, loads, nine and a half.
How do you manage your time?
On the fly, I have things that I want to do. So I like training, running, gym, stuff like that. And as long as I've done that, then the rest of my day just pans out as I feel.
What would you say has been your biggest mistake?
I know it's trite to say, but I don't really look back and think about it. And my view is, if I hadn't made whatever that mistake was, I wouldn't be here. So,
what would you say is the best piece of advice you could give to other entrepreneurs?
Most people plan forever and never do anything. Just do it. If it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
And is there one thing you would say that sets you apart from other entrepreneurs?
I'm not kind of a workaholic. Never have been. Maybe that's what works. You know, I'm quite happy to just let people, you know, point them in the right direction and see how they go.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us, Simon. Yeah, join us next time for another episode of 10 Minutes With, a podcast supported by the PHA Group, where we meet entrepreneurs and business leaders to find out what makes them unique.